The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I learned from my grandpop that money doesn't determine your worth. Oh man, that's not a joke. It's not hyperbole. I mean it from the bottom of my heart. You know, our infrastructure used to be the best in the world. Not a joke. The best in the world. And by the way, I'm a capitalist. I think if you can be a millionaire or a billionaire, fine. Oh, not a joke. This is not hyperbole. This is a fact. These are facts. Other than renewable energy. Not a joke. And I flew over all this territory. Not a joke. Not a joke. It's real. This is serious stuff. We're the only country in the world, historically, that's gone through a crisis and has come out at the other end better than before the crisis hit. It's not a joke. Think about it. You've got to build the road back literally higher. Not a joke. And if we don't do something before we reach 1.5 degrees Celsius, we're in trouble. But this is not a joke. And women are becoming not joke, not a joke, not a joke. And the cost of the Build Back Better bill in terms of adding to the deficit is zero. 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 And I come from the corporate state of the world. Not a joke. I'm not anti-business. I'm a man of my word. I really mean it. Not a joke. Not a joke.
Someone seems a little concerned that people aren't taking him seriously enough. How many times? I think Sam counted 10, 15 times. Not a joke. Not a joke. He's there just presenting facts. I think there was, by the way, I think more people turned out for the WNBA championship parade, wherever that was, yesterday. Pictures, crickets basically all around for the WNBA champ. And here's Joe Biden. He doesn't give interviews. It's been 6 weeks since he's given an interview. Doesn't talk to the press. But he comes out every once in a while to give just a rambling speech. All of these, he's going to have all of these electric car stations all over the country. High-speed internet for everybody. And you look at the headlines every day. Just today, 750 employees for GE, I think it was. They walked out in protest against the vaccine mandate. And all kinds of others in law enforcement and wherever else being laid off, fired, resigning because of this. And then the backlog with respect to shipping, I'll come to that in just a bit as well. Lots and lots to get to on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily, brought to you by, not Pfizer, brought to you by God's Family, as we said at the close of yesterday's show. Yesterday's show, if you want to get to the podcast, if you want to catch up, watch it on demand, you can go to the live stream page at our website, thetrumpet.com/live. And of course, at that very same page, you can get the live broadcast every day. It's 11 a.m. here in the central time zone of the United States. It's noon on the East Coast, and of course, 9 a.m. on the West Coast. And wherever you happen to be around the world, it's live every day at our website, thetrumpet.com. So the Telegraph and others, really, they're keeping track of just how inaccessible this fake president is. He's not sitting down for any interviews. He's given, to this point, he's given 10 interviews in 9 months. And the Telegraph compares that with Barack Obama, who had 131 interviews. I mean, they were all giving him softball questions back during those first few months of Obama's presidency. Donald Trump gave 57 interviews by this point in his presidency. And like I say, Biden, it's been 6 weeks. So he won't talk. His press, his chief propagandist, when she is asked a tough question, will just lie. Well, what do you mean hundreds being laid off? What are you talking about? Well, according to the Washington Post, said Peter Doocy, I played the clip for you yesterday. They just say it's not happening. Everybody loves the mandates. This is a story, by the way, that's not being covered enough. or when it is, people just lie. Southwest Airlines, for example. There was no sick out. We had to cancel a few flights. There is a lot of pushback to these authoritarian mandates. There's a lot of pushback, but you wouldn't know it, listening to the corporate media, because they love it. They love it. They think everyone needs to get the jab. And we're finding more and more articles that talk about just how ineffective these jabs are. And more and more talking, like Tom Berenson, I think his name is Tom, on Tucker last night about all these mysterious deaths. Just the rise in deaths across the board, not even COVID-related. And so Joe Biden, in the midst of all of this chaos, this turmoil, I have a Fox News story where it says he's turning to Barack Obama more and more because of these catastrophic poll numbers, his approval rating. It's in free fall. So he's trying to find some way to navigate his way through all of these disasters. And then he goes off to Scranton. Scranton Joe, that's the way he portrays himself. He's just a working man. Hardly makes any money, judging by his speech yesterday. He's there in Scranton talking about all of these infrastructure projects that they've got planned. They can't even get things through Congress. His policies, his everything he has on the agenda, they're so unpopular. You finally have Republicans that are showing a bit of a backbone. We're not going to vote for this. I mean, even some of the moderates on the Democrat side, Joe Manchin. He's saying, no, I don't want to be a part of this. Listen to Joe Biden carrying on yesterday about just how poor he was as a congressman for all those years, or a senator, clip two.
Now, granted, I was listed for 36 years as the poorest man in Congress, but I was making $42,000 a year. I didn't think my job was to make money when I was in Congress.
Says the man who literally made hundreds of millions of dollars while in politics. Just ask Hunter. Ask his brother. Ask his brother Jim. Remember the emails? Remember Bobulinski? Remember the 10% cut for the big guy? Remember all that? It's on Hunter's laptop. But the major media, of course, they're not concerned about that. They certainly weren't before the election. Maybe a little bit of chatter after the fact. 10% from the big guy. For the big guy, I should say. A 10% cut. Joe Biden and his son share bank accounts. And we know what kind of trouble his son was into. And there he was yesterday. Good old Scranton Joe. He's just a blue-collar working man. He was the lowest. He wasn't making any money in Congress. $42,000 a year. I mean, this is unbelievable. Is this a joke? It is a joke. This is a joke. It's illegitimate. It's fake. Even the stories he tells, we'll come to that here in just a second. Pure fakery. It's all phony. It's like a reality show. And more of America is onto it. They know. They know what's happening. Listen again to Joe Biden from yesterday, clip three.
And the cost of the Build Back Better bill in terms of adding to the deficit is zero. 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 Because we're going to pay for it all. In addition to that, half of it is a tax cut. It's not spending money. It's a tax cut for working class people.
The $5 trillion infrastructure package costs nothing. In fact, it's a tax cut. It earns America money, he says. It will cost nothing. And they've been saying this repeatedly. His press secretary says it. He says it. Zero. Zero. Trillions and trillions of dollars. Just poof, right into the infrastructure of the United States of America. And I mean, this is going to do wonders for the U.S. economy. It's not going to hurt us. It's not going to hurt the United States. It's actually a tax cut for most people. So says this president, clip four.
As we build these charging stations, what happens? Communities build up around them. You get everything from the figurative McDonald's or the Dunkin' Donuts to the drugstore.
Right. You get the electric car stations, and it just, it's boom time. McDonald's comes along. Everybody wants to build their business around the electric car recharging stations. $7 billion goes toward that alone. And we're not even, and we're going to put so much into the rail, we're not even going to need automobiles like we used to. Yeah, he said it yesterday. As people are losing their job, tens of thousands losing their jobs, or all of these skyrocketing costs, inflation, the shipping. Richard in his stack of news today, quoting someone working in shipping. I don't remember a time when so many extreme events were happening in shipping. That's from an analyst, Ben Nolan. He's been writing about shipping for 16 years. 16 years. And he says, I don't remember a time when there have been this many extreme events happening in the shipping industry. And as I say, it's causing all the costs to skyrocket. Inflation's out of control. And then you add to that people losing their jobs, or the jobs numbers that come in each month that are not just a few hundred behind the projection. They're hundreds of thousands behind. And you have this illegitimate president going on and on. I'm not joking. It's not a joke. It's not a joke. As soon as we build this electric car recharging station, it's boom time. These people are living in a fantasy world. Even as the country is going up in flames. Listen here to clip five.
How many people do you see out in McDonald's parking lots with their kids in their cars because they get access to the internet to be able to help the kid in school? What are we doing? This is the United States of America. What are we doing?
There he is saying that America has to go to McDonald's to get on the internet. So infrastructure, the internet part of it. Here's clip six.
If you can get in a train and go from here to Washington much faster than you can go in an automobile, you take a train. You take the train. We will take literally millions of automobiles off the road. Off the road. Saving tens of millions of barrels of oil. Dealing with cleaning up the air.
No wonder Joe Manchin said, no way. I think there's probably quite a few people in West Virginia that would prefer to hold on to their Ford F-150 as opposed to hopping on the rail system. But there they are. They dream of it being, they want it to be like Europe. They want it to be like several nations in Europe that have the rail systems. People travel by train, and it's, I mean, I've lived over there. It's a wonderful form of transportation. But this is the United States. It's totally, it's a different thinking. It's a different mindset. How does this message fly with most people in America? We're going to get rid of millions and millions of automobiles. That's not a joke. That's no joke. That's what they want. Sam, in his news stack, he spoke of the firefighters, policemen, nurses, doctors, all of these essential workers. And they're just being forced out by these insane mayors who are there, I guess, thinking, like in Chicago, well, if we let go of 100 here or 100 there, it's not gonna make it any more dangerous in Chicago. But that's the way that they're thinking. And they have no plan. They have no, okay, if we lose all of these essential workers, what do we do in response to it? Doesn't matter. It's all COVID, as you heard from Jen Psaki yesterday. It's just COVID. COVID's causing deaths among law enforcement. So if they're not going to get jabbed, they're fired. They're gone. It's as if there's no other problems in the nation except for COVID. All city employees in Los Angeles, they've got to be vaccinated this week or they're gone. We're coming to the point, mid-October, early November. These are the deadline weeks. So what does that mean for the road ahead? What does that mean for America's winter? Federal mandate deadline, that's Monday. November 22nd, just before Thanksgiving. The Transportation Security Administration, it says 40% of its employees are still unvaccinated. That's in transportation. We've already got all these backlogs in shipping. Like that one analyst said, I don't remember a time with this many extreme events. And there's the U.S. president yesterday. No questions. He doesn't take questions, but he's talking about green energy. He's talking about jobs and high-speed internet. He's talking about tax cuts, even as he plans to spend trillions and trillions of dollars. Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, he just got COVID, by the way, double jabbed. But he somehow he came down with the virus. He's not alone, as you know. He says that U.S. customs officials will be fired for not jabbing. So get rid of customs. It's affecting the military. It's affecting law enforcement, fire departments, nurses. Right across the board. San Francisco. 800 San Francisco City employees have asked for religious exemptions. And they're going to be denied. Yeah. They're talking behind closed doors in the fake Biden administration. Hey, how can we really put the pressure on those who bring forward religious exemptions? There's no contingency plans in place for all of these mass firings. What are these cities going to turn into? Jen Psaki right now, she thinks it's all COVID. But we're looking at another scenario similar to last summer, when you had reporters standing out in front of burning buildings saying, yeah, everything's great here. How much longer are they going to be able to do this? These propagandists. And as I say, there's a fair bit of pushback coming from people like at GE. They're just walking out. No, we're not going to do it. We're not going to be forced into it. But it's not getting quite the coverage that it should. Listen to this from Joe Biden's speech yesterday, clip 7.
What happened was, when you are a president or vice president, they keep meticulous mileage of when you fly an Air Force aircraft. And so about, I guess it was 7 years in to my tenure as vice president. And I used to always like to take Amtrak home on Friday.
So 7 years in, he tells this story. This makes up a good 10, 15-minute chunk of his rambling speech yesterday, the one in which he said it's not a joke about 15 times. So he tells this story about his history with Amtrak, riding the train. I mean, it went right up until the last year he was there as vice president with Obama. So 2015, 2016. And it's an elaborate story. I mean, lots of detail. He crossed the million miles in travel on Air Force One. And listen to what he says. This is clip 8.
And a lot of the folks in Amtrak became my family. Not a joke. I'd ride every day. I commuted every single day for 36 years as Vice President of the United States.
So it went on and on for 36 years. His Amtrak family, as he calls them, they were like family to him. And he mentions one in particular. This is clip 9.
And Angelo Negri was from, you remember Ange? Ange came up to me one day when they just had announced that I had flown 1 million some X number of miles on Air Force aircraft. And Ange comes up and I'm getting in the car and he goes, Joey, baby, what are you? And I thought the Secret Service was going to shoot him. I said, no, he's good. He's good. It's a true story.
Except that it's not true. There's really nothing about, I mean, Ange was a real person, but the store with all of the elaborate details, the 1 million miles on the Air Force, or rather aircraft for the government, Air Force One, Air Force Two, whatever it was. Listen to this from CNN. This is a story, by the way. I think yesterday was the fifth time that the fake president got into all of this detail with his history with Amtrak and just how close he was to Angelo. He called him Ange, right? For short. CNN says, but Angelo Negri had been dead for more than a year and had been retired for more than two decades. Angelo retired in 1993. And he died, I think it was in 2014, before any of this with the million miles could have even happened. I think about that for a second. Is this a joke? It is a joke, isn't it? It's fake. The whole story's made up. And the thing of it is, it's been exposed time and again, not by a conservative blogger. CNN, The Washington Post, The New York Times, The Daily Mail, across the pond even. Says here, Biden quoted Negri as saying, at the retirement dinner, we calculated it. This is from back in June. I mean, this was CNN back in June when he had told the story previously. Says, Biden quoted Negri as saying, at that retirement dinner, we calculated it. He said Negri had explained the math, then concluded, Joey, you traveled more on Amtrak. So this had to be near the end because, I mean, it was a million miles more. Or a million miles there as vice president with Obama, and then this story that he supposedly did more or put in more miles on Amtrak. It says Biden's account simply does not add up. This is CNN, the Communist News Network. Biden's account simply does not add up. Biden did not reach the million miles flown mark as vice president until September 2015. Now, Biden has said in this story, which he's repeated over and again, that when he passed the million-mile mark as vice president, it was all over the papers. It was all over the headlines. I mean, it's big news, right? He flew a lot. It says here, according to his own past comments, but Negri retired from Amtrak in 1993 and died in May of 2014. Before Biden even got past the million miles on government aircraft. It says here in the April version. So this was a story that he's told often. He keeps telling it. He told it yesterday. Again. It says in the April version, Biden claimed that the exchange with Negri had occurred during the fourth or fifth year of his vice presidency. Yesterday he said it was in the seventh year. So we're talking about 2015, I guess, which ran from early 2009 to early 2017. Again, Biden did not hit the million miles flown mark as vice president until he had been in office for more than 6.5 years, at which point Negri was deceased. He was dead. So he's talking yesterday in Scranton, even as tens of thousands of Americans are having to stand up for their livelihood, or in some cases, walk out in protest. All of these extreme events going on. And he's telling this elaborate yarn in Scranton. It says here, there is yet another issue with the story in both the April version and an October 20 version, and less directly in the Tuesday version. Biden at least hinted that the encounter with Negri occurred when he was commuting to Delaware because his mother was dying. But Biden's mother, Catherine Eugenia Jean Finnegan Biden, died in early 2010. This is unbelievable. He's literally making it all up. It's some kind of a joke. It is a joke, isn't it? It's a joke. It says more than 5 years before her son hit the million miles flown mark. It says here, in addition, Biden was exaggerating at least slightly on Tuesday when he said there had been a headline in all of the papers about his travel as vice president. While there might have been some headline in some newspaper, Biden hitting various travel thresholds was not widely treated by newspapers as headline news. It's just, I mean, you can't make this up. In fact, I guess you can make this up. He made it all up, And he's telling, and it's been proven as a hoax, as a fake story. ABC back in June. Fact check. Biden keeps repeating a false story about an Amtrak conductor he knew. This is MSN, May 6th. Biden's Amtrak anecdote derailed by conflicting details. And then this week, the Daily Mail, it says, Joe Biden is blasted for telling false story about his encounter with Amtrak conductor friend for the fifth time after it was revealed the president's version of events happened after the rail worker had died. That's the Daily Mail from yesterday. And so it continues. The lies continue. And notice just how elaborate. Yeah, remember Ange? Yeah, and Ange, he saw all the headlines. He saw when I got past a million traveling as vice president. He said to me at the retirement dinner, he said to me, you put in more miles on Amtrak. That's the president of the United States of America. For the fifth time, going on and on about a story that never happened. That's right. I mean, these are tales from the upside down world. That's what we're talking about here. This is to be more serious for a moment. This is America under attack. This is what we've been saying all along. This is a communist attack on the United States of America. Listen to this last bit from the story the fake president told yesterday, clip 10.
And he said, I just read, big deal, whatever it was, 1,200,000 miles, Air Force. You know how many miles you did Amtrak? And I said, no, Ange, I don't have any idea, pal. He said, let me tell you, we were at the retirement dinner. And he said, we added it up. You averaged 100, I think it says 21 days a year. 121 days a year, 36 years, plus as vice president, boom, boom. You have traveled over 2 million miles, Joe. I don't hear any more about the Air Force.
Is this a joke? Is he joking? This is a joke. The joke's on all of America. And more are, as I say, waking to that fact. From Breitbart yesterday, this is in response to a Rasmussen poll. Rasmussen reports surveyed 1,000 likely voters and asked, how confident are you that Joe Biden is physically and mentally up to the job of being president of the United States? A full 50% said they are not at all confident. 50%? While another 8% said not very confident. So 58% are concerned about this man's mental fitness. This is not, I disapprove of his job as president. These are people concerned about him not being mentally fit for the job. Has this ever happened in the history of the United States? It's never happened. You think about the nonstop barrage of attacks going after Donald Trump. He's crazy this and the Emoluments Clause and the 25th Amendment, whatever. On and on it went. A majority of Americans didn't think he was crazy. They may not have liked his politics. They may not have liked his tweets. Here is 58% of Americans calling into question his mental fitness, his mental acuity. It says here, in fact, only 27% said that they were very confident Biden was up to the job of being president. Only 27% feel pretty confident about this man being up for the job. Basically, only 41% of voters believe Biden has what it takes mentally and physically to be president. Rasmussen also asked, is Joe Biden doing the job of president or are others making decisions behind the scenes? Well, that's a good question. That's a question, or rather a fact, that we've talked about a fair bit on this program. It says here, only 38% believe Biden is making decisions, while a clear majority of 53% say others are making decisions for him. 53%. What do we always say? The Trumpet magazine, thetrumpet.com. Tomorrow's news today. America's coming under an attack from these communist forces headed up by Barack Obama, the one who vowed to fundamentally transform the United States of America. It says, have we ever lived in a country where 58% said the president is not mentally or physically fit to be president? And those 58% are correct. There's simply no question Biden is unfit to be president. We know this because his handlers keep him in hiding. And you can see why. How does this story happen twice, let alone five times? The Ange story. Angelo! Hey, Angelo! Million miles! I added it up! 36 years! You did at least 2 million on Amtrak! Angelo's dead. Angelo retired in 1993. Angelo retired 28 years ago. And yesterday, you got the full-length version of the elaborate yarn for the fifth time. It says here, one of the basic rules of politics is that you put an end to negative speculation by meeting it head-on. If the criticism says you can't or won't or are incapable of doing that, you go out and show the world you are doing that. You meet it head on. They think I'm not fit. Well, I'll show them. As it is, well, it happened just this week. There was another engagement. There was loud music going on in the background. The fake president came up to the mic and started in with his speech before his wife yanked him aside. No, no, it's not time for the speaking yet. The music's still carrying on. 6 weeks without an interview. Why? It says one example occurred when the former President Trump was accused of cowering in the White House bunker during the Black Lives Matter riots. A few days later, he walked across the street from the White House, held up a Bible at a local church vandalized by those terrorists. He met it head on, and of course, he was mocked and ridiculed for that. But he was fit in more ways than one, and this one, of course, is not, but that's all right. Because it's just what Obama envisioned last year. Yeah, I kind of like the idea of being in the basement and running the show. Fox headline, this is this week, Biden leans more on Obama with White House under pressure from multiple crises. Biden leans more on Obama. Obama. Says the president's approval rating stood at just 38% with disapproval at 53%. That's according to an October 6 poll. It says here, President Biden appears to be leaning more on his former boss as the White House comes under increased pressure to improve the nation's economy and outlook on the future of the Democratic Party. It says here, former President Obama will attend the United Nations COP26 Climate Summit in Glasgow, Scotland, early next month to highlight the important progress made with climate change since the Paris Agreement took effect. So you got Biden and his people, they're going. And you got Obama, he's going too. Biden and Obama. Joe Obama, they're both going to be in Glasgow. Perfect, it's perfect. It's perfect. Fox says earlier this year, the White House said Biden and Obama spoke regularly about a range of issues as well as personal matters, but did not disclose the frequency of those conversations. Yeah, that's a carefully guarded secret. Just like all those contracts between Pfizer and nations abroad. You've got to make sure that you cover up the details of that, because it looks pretty bad if you actually see what's going on when he goes home to Delaware every other weekend to see actually who he is meeting with. Who actually is pulling the strings? People know it. people know it. Look at how accurate the trumpet has been these past many months. And you look at the fight, the attack coming from the communist left, and you see how it's dividing this nation. It's just ripping it apart, ripping it to shreds. This is another poll. Significant numbers of both Trump and Biden voters show a willingness to consider violating democratic tendencies and norms if needed to serve their priorities. Roughly 2 in 10 Trump and Biden voters strongly agree it would be better if a president could take needed actions without being constrained by Congress or courts. And roughly 4 in 10 of Biden and half of Trump voters at least somewhat agree that it's time to split the country, favoring blue-red states seceding from the Union. It's time for a divorce. Tom Elliott, he was calling for it at Grabian. We get a lot of our clips from him. Yeah, it's time for a divorce. It's pretty common in our society, so why not do it nationally? And we can both go our separate ways. The United States of America. Remember the other day, we talked about the suddenness of our collapse. Mr. Armstrong wrote of this in the United States and Britain in Prophecy. It happened suddenly to Great Britain following World War II, and now we're seeing it happen to the United States of America. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can send us a comment, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Right at the tail end of yesterday's show, I referred you to the passage there in Acts 3 that speaks of the restitution or restoration of all things, God's government in particular, to this earth. A revival, a refreshing is coming, as I said yesterday. That verse 21, it says about Christ, whom the heaven must receive until the times of restitution of all things, which God has spoken by the mouth of all his holy prophets since the world began. I mean, it's just there from beginning to end in your Bible. Spoken by all of his holy prophets. The heaven to receive Christ until the restoration of all things, restoring something that had been taken away or removed. Even Moffat, the Moffat translation, calls it the Great Restoration. The Great Restoration. What was taken away? Well, God's government was removed from this earth. When Lucifer rebelled along with one-third of the holy angels, they became demons. They became a demon army, a host, as it says in Daniel 8. God's government was removed. Notice this in Ezekiel 28. I might have gotten into some of this early in the week. but we can repeat it here. Ezekiel 28 and verse 12, it says, "Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyrus and say unto him, thus says the eternal God, you seal up the wisdom, you seal up the sum, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty." He was perfectly beautiful, wise. Seals up the sum. What a creation of God's. "You have been in Eden, the garden of God," verse 13. "Every precious stone was your covering." So he had this wonderful ability to create beautiful, godly music, as you can see there with the last part of that verse. And then he's surrounded by all of this physical beauty, this the wealth and the riches, precious stones of all kinds, and placed in Eden, the garden of God. I gave you this quote earlier in the week. It says, God is always trying to get angels and men to create Eden, the garden of God. That's what we're here to create and what we'll be creating in the world tomorrow. God's always trying to get us to create and to beautify and to maintain. I mean, it does matter how we take care of our things, how we manage our environment. It says a lot about our character. It says here, today God is giving us some land to create a garden of God. That's my father talking about this work. And of course, you can see the work that's gone into it, 21 years or so on this campus. Ed Stone, we've only had that for a little less than 7 years. But so much beauty, such an uplifting environment. And as I've been telling the students here recently, what a blessing it is to be in this environment, to be in a godly environment, to be in an environment where it's just automatically uplifting and inspiring. There's a lot of places on this earth that are not that at all. They're depressing. It says here, God wants to see us create that garden, that Garden of Eden, and conquer Satan in the process. Something at which the first Adam failed, and the second Adam, Christ, succeeded. See, the first Adam, God put him in the Garden of Eden as well. And he, like Mr. Armstrong explained in Mystery of the Ages and Incredible Human Potential, he could have replaced Satan on the throne of this earth. Adam, if he would have built a garden for God or maintained a garden for God and conquered Satan in the process. But he didn't do that. He followed after his wife, and they both took from the forbidden tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. They decided for themselves to what would be right, what would be wrong. Forget about God's standard. Forget about God's instructions. They went their own way as led by the devil. They followed after Satan in his way, and man's been following in that same direction ever since, excepting those few that have been called out of this world to be prepared for positions of leadership in the wonderful world tomorrow and beyond, to be prepared to marry Jesus Christ, the second Adam. You've got Christ. He's referred to as that second Adam in 1 Corinthians 15. And the church, I mean, it's like the second Eve. They're doing it right. This is a family that's obedient to God's laws, that's building an Eden, a garden of God, and conquering the devil in the process. Verse 14, it says about Lucifer here, "You are the anointed cherub that covers, and I have set you so. You are upon the holy mountain of God. You have walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire." I mean, he was right at the very throne room of God, trained at headquarters, trained at the feet of God, his maker, his creator. And God here is reminding him of his history, saying, you know, I set you there. I gave you that assignment at the throne room initially, and then commissioned you to go on out and to administer the government of God as you learned it here on earth over the third of the angels. In the Ezekiel booklet, My father writes, Satan is very hostile to history and he works extremely hard to destroy it. He wants to blot it out. He wants to blot out his own history. He hates it when he's reminded of this glorious beginning. That time when he was serving God, when he was actually carrying out God's commands, God's instructions, when he was actually supporting God's work. You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created until iniquity was found in you. So when lawlessness was found in him, I mean, the government on this earth, it changed dramatically. It was fundamentally transformed into lawlessness and rebellion. In the God Family Government book, it says, God put Lucifer in charge of the earth and over one-third of the angels, but Lucifer led the angels to rebel. They lost their joy and happiness when God's government was rejected. It says, true joy and peace can only be produced by submitting to God's government. God's government brings peace. God's government brings joy. Joy and peace into our lives. God's government maintains order. God is the author of orderliness. It's a law. It's based on law. That is the way of love, the way of give. Verse 16, it says, by the multitude of your merchandise, they have filled the midst of you with violence. And you have sinned, it says, therefore will I cast you down, and so on. Verse 17 says, your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You have corrupted your wisdom by reason of your brightness. I will cast you to the ground. I will lay you before kings, that they may behold you. Look at what happened to this being, Lucifer. My father says in the Ezekiel booklet that we need to look closely at what happened here. And also to our brethren in Laodicea. So many of God's people that have just gone the way of the devil. They've rejoined the world. It says, because Satan is still in power on this earth, he despises having his failures exposed. He detests the thought of being cast into outer darkness. He knows his time is short. And so he's really coming after God's people. We're his primary target. The devil is, he's coming after the family of God, and so many of God's people have been deceived. They've fallen away from the truth. 2 Thessalonians 2, of course, talks about this great falling away that's happened in our day. Notice Isaiah 14, verse 12. It says, how are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How are you cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. He's filled with vanity and arrogance. And he went and challenged God. He wanted to kick God off of the throne of the universe. God's throne room. And notice this rebellion, as it says there in verse 12. It weakens nations. That's what the devil does. He weakens entire nations, as I've noted previously. His rebellion caused great damage all throughout the universe. His rebellion has brought damage to planets, entire planets. Tohu and Bohu, we've covered that recently. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. I mean, who talks this way? Who thinks this way? Well, you look around our world and you see a lot of people who think exactly this same way. It's coming from Satan the devil, that spirit. He's the prince of the power of the air, Ephesians 2:2. He's the God of this world, 2 Corinthians 4:4. And this is why the whole world is deceived. This is why the spirit of rebellion is so strong. Anarchy. Well, God, as I said, he created Adam. He placed him in the Garden of Eden together with his wife, Eve. And he offered them the tree of life. They could have built and beautified a Garden of Eden, utopia, and conquered Satan at the same time. But they didn't do it. Verse 26 of Genesis 1 says, "And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So you can read the next couple of verses there and see where it says to have dominion and to subdue the earth, given charge over the animals in the animal kingdom. And then you get into chapter 2 and you see where God ordained the Sabbath. He created the Sabbath day. And then later it says in Genesis 2, 7 and 8 that man was formed of the dust of the ground. Just dust, but of course there was a human spirit there. That's what sets us apart from the animals. But God offered man his spirit, the Holy Spirit, to join together with the human spirit. That's discussed over in Romans 8. That's what God wants. He created man to have a relationship with his maker, to have a relationship with God, and we can have that because of the godly type mind that he gave us, that he created us with. And that human spirit can actually join together with God's spirit after repentance and faith, baptism, the laying on of hands, the receipt of that holy power, that awesome power that brought the universe into existence. That same power can dwell in your mind and mine. It's the power of love. It's the power of a sound mind or a disciplined mind, as I was saying this morning to the students at the forum. God wants us to be in control. He wants us to have temperance. He wants us to really organize our lives around Him, to really bring order and structure to our living, so that we can obey God in everything. Verse 16, this is chapter 2, "And the eternal God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat of it, for in the day that you eat thereof you shall surely die." And yet that's exactly what Adam and Eve did. And look at the death and the misery and the suffering and the division and the strife that has since come into this civilization of ours. Man cut off from the tree of life. Read it in chapter 3, Genesis 3, verses 22 to 24. God sent him forth from the garden. See, he stopped creating for God. He stopped conquering the devil. He surrendered to the devil. And then you look out at this world today. This is important. This is important context. This is important history. We're right here, like Mr. Armstrong said, we're right here at the end of the movie. And to understand it, to make sense of it, to know why it is the way it is, you've got to go back to the beginning. You've got to see how this world started. You've got to see how the movie began. And then it explains a lot, doesn't it? Then you can look at this world today and go, okay, now I understand why it is the way it is. With, as we covered yesterday, big pharmaceuticals, or why there's so much deception, deceit, lies in politics among leaders. The devil's behind it all. He weakens entire nations, the Bible tells us. God, though, is preparing another world to be set up and established, built and beautified and maintained at the return of Jesus Christ to this earth, written about by all of the prophets of old. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.